Next up on Express Yourself, I'm joined by Sebastian Africano and John Becker here to represent the Trees, Water, and People organization. This is Colorado-based. However, they are working throughout Central America and the United States, working with different tribal nations. And they're presenting in Basalt tonight at 5 o'clock, so people have the opportunity to learn more about this organization. To begin, Sebastian, as the executive director, could you tell us a little bit about how this organization got started and why it exists?
Yeah, Raleigh, thanks for having us. Great to be in the Roaring Fork Valley. Trees, Water, People's been around for 21 years. We're Colorado born and raised. We were founded in 1998 on the heels of Hurricane Mitch in Central America, which was a major climate event, a hurricane that just sat over Honduras and Nicaragua for several weeks and displaced probably millions of people, killed about 5,000 in Honduras alone. The founder of the organization was a forester, an international forester who had done Peace Corps in Guatemala and had just started the organization, and so immediately jumped in to see how he could help. So the organization was born in response to a climate disaster and a humanitarian disaster, and one of the major issues that we saw were mass loss of forest cover, also fuel lines cut off to the city. A large percentage of Central Americans still cook with firewood, probably 95% of the rural population on open fires, and in the urban areas too. And with the fuel lines cut off to the city, because most of the firewood comes from rural areas, Trees, Water, and People came in to try to develop more efficient solutions for cooking, and that's how we got started.
Okay. And so the organization focuses on planting trees as one project, but then there is this element of installing wood, or not wood burning stoves, other kinds of stoves.
They are wood burning.
Oh, they are wood burning. Yes. Okay. So there's a little circle there with trees.
We've experimented with other technologies, but wood burning is very much in the culture there, mm-hmm. and there's so much room for improvement with the existing systems that, our future fantasy might be something other than burning wood. The present reality is wood, but we help them do it much more efficiently.
So what's the difference between the open fires they might be cooking on and the stoves that you would install?
Yeah, to John's point, the open fire is basically a smoldering campfire in the middle of someone's living room or house, right? And most of these houses are small, one, two, or three rooms. So the carbon monoxide and the particulates from those fires just permeate every part of the home. People are breathing it nonstop since day one of their life on the planet. And you see chronic health effects and impacts in the household. You also see soot on the walls. Women smell like smoke. And so the stoves that we've designed and we've tested over 20 years are very simple, but essentially have a sealed griddle on top and a chimney to vent the smoke outside, and then also a very efficient combustion chamber that requires about half the firewood to produce the same amount of heat. So you're saving firewood, getting the smoke out of the house, and it's really a transformational technology, but very, very simple. And in the process, we've also planted over 7 million trees in the past 20 years in Central America and here in the U.S. So we're working on both the supply and demand side of the firewood equation in Central America. There's still 20 million people cooking on open fires in Central America, and about 85% of those are in Honduras, Nicaragua, and Guatemala.
So how does it all tie together, the planting of trees and the installing stoves? You also work setting up renewable energy.
Yeah, I mean, we really realized several years ago that we're a rural livelihoods organization. And so when we started to hear more and more about the migration crisis that out of Central America, you know, this is something that we've been working on for 20 years and talking about for 20 years, that rural livelihoods are getting more and more difficult. And, there's lack of services, infrastructure, economies, lack of access to capital and credit, and most people are small farmers. And so while, you know, the technologies and the tree planting and the tree nurseries are kind of our signature products, we really look at rural life in many facets. So we're trying to diversify incomes, diversify diets, and create food security and sovereignty while improving health in the home and reducing the amount of energy required by the household to cook. And then at the same time, producing jobs and employment and generating new income, diversifying agriculture. So it's a really, it's a multi-layered operation. We work through local partners, so it's not just us. Mm-hmm. We have a broad network that we've built over 20 years of organizations and universities and local governments that help deliver the services that we help fund.
And how did you each become involved in this particular work? We can start with you, John, board member.
I was into it first before Sebastian. I was probably, I jokingly refer to it as that they, Trees, Water, and People reached out to contact me during the Appalachian period of their evolution when everybody on the board was related to each other. Uh-huh. And they decided they should branch out beyond that. And they heard about through a friend of a friend about me as a business person in Boulder working in solar energy with so I could bring business experience to them, which is whether you're a profit or a nonprofit, you still have to pay the bills. And my background in solar was interesting to them too. And curiously, I had independently discovered them some period of months before that, where I read a story in the paper about them, about the that was around the launch time 15 years ago of the clean cookstove work. And it was one of these great moments in life where I had read about the idea of clean cookstoves when I was in college 10 years before that, and thought, oh, what a brilliant idea. It makes total sense from an environmental point of view, an engineering point of view, a social point of view. So I'll probably die before it ever even happens. And here it was happening. So I was so thrilled and wrote him a check for $50 and put it in the mail. So we kind of discovered each other, and they asked me to join the board, and I was thrilled to. And as the decades have gone by, I've been president of the board for an extended period, and you know, sometimes it's close to my full-time job. But it's a wonderful organization, and one of our real triumphs was 10 years ago landing Sebastian, first to be our assistant international director at first, and he's marched up the ladder from there to be our executive director now. So why don't you tell the story from there?
Yeah, it actually started for me 5 years before that. I was recruited by chance to be an intern for Trees, Water, and People in Tegucigalpa, Honduras, to get a commercial cook stove program off the ground where it all began. This was in 2005. So I went down to Honduras sight unseen and had a six-month contract, essentially working for a stipend to pay my rent and food, and I ended up staying 4 years. And in that process, kind of developed a career in international development around biomass cookstoves, worked in 14 countries, and then was invited in 2009 to come move to Colorado and work for Trees, Water, People full-time. So it's been a long history for both of us.
So this presentation tonight at the Rocky Mountain Institute in Basalt, what is the focus going to be?
We titled the presentation Running from Climate Change. You know, we've seen climate change as one of the big drivers of migration out of rural communities for a long time, and we've been kind of beating that drum. And really over the past 3 years with more media focus and attention and more political focus and attention on migration out of Central America, it's really put us in the spotlight as a protagonist in the story. And we're you know, we can't say enough about how important this issue is. Central America, you know, rural livelihoods are very vulnerable to begin with. If it was just economic issues or security issues, that would be one thing. But when precipitation patterns are changing, and when you know, crop prices are collapsing, and fungus is wiping out rural wealth in agriculture, these are trends that are going to continue to accelerate and continue to push more people out of rural areas into cities in Central America that are already at over capacity. And that's really where the migration north begins, north or south, but out of those countries. So we think that there's, you know, these are solvable problems and we can address them at the root rather than addressing symptoms. We can address them at the root by creating better standards of living in rural areas, more opportunities and unlocking some of the potential that exists in rural areas and providing support where there's none right now.
So rather than just locking people into their crisis, that's, you know, as we know, it's something that we're collectively as a globe the catalyst for, and we're all going to experience the changes it brings, but sympathizing with the realities that people are facing and looking at how you can help build an economic structure that makes sense for the area and provide work that is also mitigating climate, like planting trees.
And if you want to be even a little more selfish about it, a lot of the people that we work with in Central America grow coffee. Mm. And if their communities fail and they abandon them, I don't know where your morning cup of coffee is going to come from. And I know for me, that would be a crisis. Uh-huh. So I think there's lots of levels to relate to this on. And you can include among it some very simple and selfish ones that they're part of this worldwide chain that provides some very important things to us. So that we have a vested interest in seeing that their communities and the products that come out of them remain healthy.
Is the work that's done with indigenous nations here within the United States, is that much different than the work that you do in Central America?
Yes and no. I mean, there's such strong parallels. I got the opportunity to travel with Henry Red Cloud down to Guatemala and hear some of his stories. I was, you know, interpreting for him while we were on the trip. And he's a solar warrior that has really built a strong organization called Red Cloud Renewable on Pine Ridge that we support as well. But the story is similar. You know, when he came of age and he said, you know, I'm stuck on this reservation with no economy, no opportunity. And, you know, my culture has been wiped out and my traditional ways of being have been kind of smothered by history and everything that goes into that. He said, you know, if I really want to make a difference for my community, I have to leave. And so he left Pine Ridge at a certain age. I don't know how old he was, and became a steel worker and traveled the U.S. learning trades and picking up skills and making income. And until finally he said, okay, it's time to go back now. I think I've learned enough and I'm stable enough that I can actually do something for my family. But, you know, that parallel kind of clicked when we were in Guatemala and he was telling me these stories that if there's no rural economy to support these communities, they're going to have to look elsewhere for a way to feed their families. And in Central America, where, you know, the majority of the rural population is a smallholder farmer, you know, it doesn't take much to tip the first domino and have it affect the whole economy, the whole food production system, et cetera. And to, you know, and to drive more and more people to cities and then beyond cities as those cities reach capacity. But yeah, you know, one of our main foci here on tribal lands is how do we develop local capacity, but then also influence the local economy so that it's there to catch that capacity and put it to good work and contribute to the local community development.
So for people who live here locally within our listening area, or people listening in other parts of the world that want to be involved and maybe can't make it to the presentation tonight, what opportunities are there?
Yeah, check out our website. We have a lot of great information and a very comprehensive video that speaks to all this work. That's treeswaterpeople.org. We also have a tour company called TWP Tours, and the website is twp.tours. where we actually take groups of people to Central America and also on experiences here on tribal lands, where we learn about culture, history, economy, environment, and actually can participate in some of this work, getting trees in the ground, building cook stoves, working on solar projects, et cetera. So that's the best way to get involved, the best way to understand what we do and why we do it. Mm-hmm. So I encourage people to visit those websites, check us out. You know, we're proud to be a Colorado born and raised organization and really want to get our message out throughout the state.
We're beyond a volunteer organization, and we have a small staff led by Sebastian. But it's remarkable the amount of work that we get done and the multiplier effect that I see when I witness the projects where, you know, the dollar that gets put into it through our generous contributors does $5 or $10 or $20 worth of good in the end in the field. I think we're representative of a huge number worldwide of small nonprofit NGO type of organizations that are really moving the ball in a big way on issues like climate change. There's plenty to be depressed about with our government's refusal to acknowledge the depth and scope of the problem. But at the same time, there's literally millions of organizations like ours who are out there doing it on a daily basis and really making a difference. So it was interesting in an earlier talk today, somebody asked Sebastian how he avoids depression, because you know, we work in a field where there's no shortage of bad news, but actually working in it and doing what we do, I get such a charge out of it that when you're doing it, depression is the furthest thing from your mind. You're just filled with overwhelm at the incredible tenacity and brilliance and abilities of people around the world who do so much with so little.
Mm-hmm. That was something I noted exploring the website was you have a section for each of the countries that you help. And just the brilliance in the faces of the people, their smiles, you could feel how playful many of them are just through looking at those. So I see that this isn't an organization that assumes it's a one-way street of service, but really is valuing the connection and the learning opportunity of being with different people in these countries and experiencing life through their eyes.
Yeah, and also their hands, you know, they have the capacity exists, the answers exist. There's very talented and motivated people down there. If they can smile, I've got nothing to complain about or be depressed about. And if they're charging forward and believe that there is a solution, because they don't want to leave, they don't want to see their neighbors and friends and family and country people leave. And they're working on solutions. What they need is additional support, fuel in their tank, wind in their sails, encouragement, opportunities to test and develop some of the solutions that they know will reverse this flow of migration and help people adapt to climate change. Because it's already there. It's not a theoretical in Central America and rural Central America. Climate change has arrived and has settled in. And it's not going anywhere. So right now, you know, it's a combined approach of mitigation and adaptation to the new reality and how we can weather the storm that's upon us.
All right. Well, Sebastian Africano and John Becker, thank you both for joining me on Express Yourself. Anything else that either of you would like to add?
Thank you so much, Raleigh, for having us. It's great to be up here. We consider this part of our extended home.
Yeah, and we'll see you at the Rocky Mountain Institute at 5 o'clock.